Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This episode of the IGN UK podcast is brought to you by Alienware. Check out their latest generation of gaming laptops, desktops, monitors, and accessories featuring truly out-of-this-world designs. Visit alienware.co.uk today.
Welcome to the IGN UK podcast. It's Big Energy Friday, and I'm Simon. Show us your energy, Joe.
Yay!
Matt, energy. Yeah, I think you echo the souls of us all.
It's been a long week, man. It's been a long week.
It has, but you know what that means? It means we've got a lot to talk about on this week's podcast, including all the stuff from Gamescom last night, all the stuff from DC Fandome, which was only about 5 or 6 days ago, but feels like an eternity ago at this point.
Jesus Christ.
I forgot it had happened.
I know. And a couple other bits. It does mean I'm gonna just let some people down now. Some people may cheer when they hear this. There will be no endless search this week because of the sheer amount of things we actually have to talk about.
And well, there was one person last time said you don't even need to do the game, just please put the music in. I don't think we should. It could be the final music.
Yeah, should we just play it at the end instead? So if you really want to hear the endless search music, you have to wait till the end of the podcast.
Codemile are legends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there you go. Should we start off with some talk about some games that we saw last night? Let's kick it off. We talked briefly about it last week, but now we know a lot more about it. Call of Duty, Black Ops, Cold War, which was technically revealed on Wednesday, but we learned a little bit more about it yesterday because we saw Reagan giving a lovely speech, as he does.
You know,
I
did this as a tweet, but imagine being the person in 2020 that had to recreate a photorealistic Richard Nixon. Like, imagine how weird your life would feel for that period, especially if they had to do it during lockdown. Just sitting on their own in their house, sculpting those folds in his horrible face. Mental.
I mean, do you mean Reagan or Nixon?
Reagan. Reagan, you know, I mean, that one. Nixon. The guy who was on the screen.
Reagan, yeah. Not Reagan from The Exorcist, though. That's a very different Reagan, although both have very severe dark energy, you could say.
Yes.
Severe
dark energy.
Black Ops Cold War is a sequel to Black Ops 1, which is, you know, why not? People like that one. I see what they're doing. They're going back to what people like. Are you excited for this, Matthew?
No. Sorry. This has just confirmed to me, like I've said before, I don't really like the Treyarch Call of Duties. I'm sure it will play great and I will play the campaign and I will just complain about it. But I'm not into the idea of playing a game where I'm playing the chums of Reagan going on deeply illegal missions.
That may take a turn, though. You never know. It may take a turn.
I don't trust it to. That's my thing. Like I've seen quite a lot from Infinity Ward where they do a really interesting thing where they talk about how far you have to push the boundaries in conflict and especially the earlier modern warfares were to do with the discomfort around that. And I felt the new reboot of Modern Warfare tried to deal with that as well. The whole thing of them sitting around that desk just going, yeah, fuck yeah, let's do an illegal mission. It doesn't sit with me right, even though I think it looks like the most gorgeous video game ever made.
Oh, don't my favourite bit scene of that trailer that they showed last night is the weird shift in energy when they're all just doing like deep, you know, we've got to do some stuff chat. Mm. And then that one guy just out of nowhere is just like, every mission we do is legal. You're like, whoa, dude, you brought a totally different vibe to
this
table.
He's bringing big energy. And that's what I appreciated with
him. He was so big energy. It was weird.
That briefing scene didn't do a lot for me. I mean, it looks gorgeous.
I love the hair. The hair is good. Very good hair.
But the actual gameplay trailer we saw before, I was into that because it looks like there's a good variety of missions, a lot more, some big set pieces you can see going on already. The Vietnam mission, I don't know if you've read about that, seems really cool. It's like a flashback that also seems to bring in weird, almost control-like elements, just like big doors dropping out of nowhere into the ground and stuff. What? Just like, I think it's meant to be, you know, going into
the numbers, the psychology, Mason, of the character. The numbers.
Yeah, it's going into that a bit.
But see, I'm into that side.
They've described it as their most unique Call of Duty level ever.
Okay. I'm down for that, and I like, you know, as I was saying the other week, kind of like I like the idea of them trying to put a little bit of the kind of sci-fi sleeper agent side to it, because that also is, it's a cool thing to think about in like that conspiracy theory from the war, and I'd rather lean into conspiracy theory so that we can do kind of cooler things that are a bit more video gamey rather than dealing with a very prickly part of history. Yeah. Where I think if you play it too straight, it just comes across a bit potentially
jingoist.
It's
definitely going to be some alternate history stuff, just like the original Black Ops. And also the thing, I don't know if it's just the Vietnam mission, but I heard them talking about it, is that some of the levels are pretty open. Like, they're a big open area with multiple objectives, including side objectives, which you don't normally see in a Call of Duty. So
no, I think, didn't they try that out in Black Ops 2? That's almost like a hot
back. Yeah, Black Ops 2 had that stuff. That was one of the first things I ever did in this industry, was write up an interview from Black Ops 2. And I remember being like, whoa, this is changing the game, guys. It's crazy.
Well, let's see if they do it this time. I will play the campaign. It remains to be seen what it entails.
Yeah.
Honestly, how it affects Warzone as well.
Well, that's it. I'm at the point where all I really care about is Warzone. So I'm just, the fact that they haven't talked about what the integration for that means yet is super interesting to me. Like, barring the Know Your History event, which if you didn't play it, basically you did a battle royale, but something was going all weird and redacting all the place names in the town you've been in for a year.
You did a simple mission. You got the Bay of Pigs gun blueprint at the end, which was for the SKS, which is my least favourite gun in the whole game. So cheers for that, lads.
I guess the SKS is a bit more 80s-ish, though, isn't it? So I suppose it fits.
You know, do the Car 98 or something that people actually use.
I love that it's the Bay of Pigs one as well. It's like, it's the worst gun and it's got a failed missions name attached to it.
Exactly. But no, I'm buying it so far, but yeah, it remains to be seen where they go with that. Dragon Age 4.
Yeah, boy.
I've never played a Dragon Age.
Oh, Cardi.
I've only played Inquisition, but that was enough because, not as in I didn't like it, as in that was enough to get me excited for this, because the ending to that game just led me to want to play more Dragon Age. I actually never did Trespasser, the DLC, which apparently expands on that ending quite a lot. But the elf man making the funny faces that they showed Cardi during that guy's called Solus. He has one of the best twist endings in games. It was brilliant to have him appear.
I wasn't aware of this. I assumed that the Dragon Age stories were very separate. They actually a run through of
a running universe. They are quite, they're distinctly separate in that you play a different person each time. But there's always been, like, the Grey Wardens are sort of part of it, who are the people that you played in the first game. And, like, by the time you get to Inquisition, the Grey Wardens are sort of split up, but one of your party members is a Grey Warden or an ex-Grey Warden. I can't remember quite. So it's kind of like this fantasy universe that evolves, and, like, a character from the expansion to the first game was a major character in the second game. So it has those kind of flowing bits. But I think because of, like, what Joe was saying about Solas towards the end of Inquisition, I feel like 4 might be the most directish sequel they might
do. It
feels
like it's got to be, right? Like, mm-hmm. it would be kind of nuts if it isn't. We can spoil Inquisition, I guess, but I'm not going to go necessarily directly into it, but there's like a very apocalyptic vibe. so you kind of expect something to come from it. But for, you know, when we see these teasers for games that don't exist yet, I thought this was actually one of the best ones I've seen, where it's like, we can't really tell you very much, but we'll have a bunch of people telling you kind of what we're going for. We'll have concept art, we'll have teasers, we'll have new voice actors and new character names. And you're like, I didn't learn very much about what Dragon Age 4 is, but I feel like I got a good look at it, if that kind of makes a sense.
People seemed very excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was... I think there was a lot to be interested in if you're interested in that series. And I think that's what it was designed for. It was designed to placate the people who want Dragon Age rather than get new Dragon Age people in.
Mm-hmm. It's like the names that they use. Like, you've got Mark Dara, who's like the first person they brought on, who is like old school BioWare. So he was kind of like producer on the first one. I'm fairly sure he was involved in Baldur's Gate, because Dragon Age is the spiritual successor to the original Baldur's Gate games. So you've got all of that coming through. There was concept art that got Dorian in it, who's a fan favorite character. So like, it looks like he's coming back. It doesn't look like anywhere in the world that we've sort of been. There's a lot more snow, a lot more, as Joe says, an almost slightly apocalypse vibe to like big secluded places and stuff like that. So yeah, it's got me very excited, and the music is there and all of that.
The thing I liked was they said this is a story about someone who doesn't have power in a world where the people in power don't do anything, and I thought that was quite a cool little thing. Is that also, Matt, you know better than me, is that a hint towards Tevinter stuff, where it was like
possibly
because
yeah.
they're like evil empire-y type stuff? But the thing I liked was I immediately saw people being like, what, the character's got no powers? It's like, no, it's Dragon Age, you're going to become a magical savior of the world.
Spend
I don't
the whole
think
game
you need to
running,
worry about that
running around with your fists.
Yeah, exactly. But
well,
yeah,
that looks like it's at least 3 years off, 2 years, three. Oh, I don't know.
It's gonna be fucking ages, don't you worry about it. They'd make an Anthem 2.0.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that,
poor bastards.
Oh dear. People still haven't got that Mass Effect remaster though, which everyone asks for every month of the year. But
look,
maybe it'll come one day.
If they can announce Skate 4, there's a possibility.
Yeah. I'm actually playing them. You've got your big games, you've also got your smaller games. Teardown.
Yes.
That's the first I've seen of Teardown.
I've been excited for Teardown for a little while.
Yeah.
And I was delighted to see it turn out.
I just like this, you know. Let alone the fact it has a game inside it, just a world where you can destroy everything.
So,
sounds fun to me.
It was funny because so the first time I heard about this was I tweeted that I wanted a game version of the Slipknot video for Duality, where it's a load of people smashing up a house, and I just wanted that. And then like
you just
three
push
people
your fingers into your eyes,
yeah. And then three people linked me to Teardown, and I looked at it and I was like, yes, this is the game that I want. So I'm super into it. Like, I do. I don't want to kind of sniff at the actual game because there's a cool idea at the heart of it. If you don't know, basically, you smash up a place and then you're smashing it up with a view towards being able to pull off a very perfect heist. But it's a heist where no one's there to stop you from smashing the entire place up in the first place.
Yeah, so I read up about it. So apparently, I don't know if you do that prep and then you start the heist. I don't know which way around it works.
That's what the trailer suggests that you do.
That, I believe, is the deal. So you're there.
As soon as you trigger the heist, the alarms go off and you're on a clock, basically, to get out.
I think what it is, rather than thinking of it as a heist game in the way that we think about it, it's almost like you're preparing a speed run. I think that's the better way to think of it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I kind of hope there is a free mode where I can just like, you know, just like fuck everything up and it falls over nicely. That's what I want.
That's what they should have called the game.
Fuck everything up. Yeah.
Also, another indie game, 12 Minutes from Annapurna, starring now Willem Dafoe, James McAvoy, and Daisy Ridley.
Mental.
That's the cast. I tweeted last night, but no one cared. Putting Willem Dafoe in your game never ends badly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But this one genuinely does look brilliant. I can't wait for this game.
This is the thing, right? We've seen this twice in major events.
Mm.
And it obviously communicates itself quite well. Everyone's very excited for a game where we've basically not seen what the game is. Like, I am slightly worried
I'm
that
just
it could...
into the vibe. I think it's... I don't think there's going to be much of a game in that. I think it is... They call it an interactive thriller for a reason, I think.
Yeah.
I think you're walking around inside a film, effectively.
Like, I love...
Which I'm up for.
Yeah, I love the vibe and I love the conceit. But it is funny seeing how much excitement there is for a game where it's just like, we haven't seen the fucking game yet. We've seen two trailers with different voices in them. That's it.
Yeah, we saw it at E3 last year and... Seen it again now. Not seen much more of it. We know who's in it now. They said coming soon. I just kind of want to... When?
It does feel like, you know, very clearly James McAvoy and Daisy Ridley are the people in bed. So is Willem Dafoe the horrible hitman that's coming and
is
fucking them up?
Or is he a narrator?
I do hope he's the horrible man coming to kill them, because that's good casting.
Yeah. He can play horrible men. Although I'm sure in real life he's a lovely man. I'm just assuming that.
Big old dick. Have you seen it? It's incredible. Genuinely. He's a blessed man.
Antichrist.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not what he calls it.
Matt looks unhappy with this conversation.
The problem is when you talk about Willem Dafoe's dick, is all I can think of is Antichrist, and that's not a good situation for it.
No.
Yeah. Well,
in happier times.
Better than calling it the Green Goblin.
Pumpkin Bomb. Carry on.
A nice surprise. I've never really cared about The Sims since I was probably about 10 or 11, but... I do like the idea of being able to build your own Star Wars cantina inside it.
Yeah, it seems all right. There is something very nice about hearing a stormtrooper speaking in Simlish.
Yeah.
Like when he saw, there's a bit where he sees a transport and he's just like, "Hrvgatark," and I'm like, "Yeah, what a ledge."
I didn't know anything about this. I'm not sure how big an expansion it is, but it looks quite extensive from the trailer.
Sims is often very, you know, it's famously kind of micro transaction-y and in a way it releases stuff and that's how it keeps being a $1 billion empire or whatever it is. But this does look like a proper when they started showing it, I was like, is this a Sim spin-off like in the old school where they did the herbs and all that kind of stuff? Have they gone back? But no, it is a full add-on of some kind. So yeah, I'm quite excited. Like, I don't know if I'll ever play it, but I'm kind of glad it exists and that I'll see people playing it. You know, when you see people making really good stuff in games, you're like, I'm so happy I didn't have to make that to see it.
That's the thing. That's all I used to ever do in The Sims, is build a house and then stop playing. I never actually played the actual game of, you know, doing The Sims
live
life.
Live a life.
You know, doing what, I don't know, have a job, set things on fire and stop a burglar. I don't know. That's what The Sims is to me. More Fall Guys is coming. That's a surprise to no one.
I really liked that they went kind of with a new skin vibe. That's cool.
Yeah, they're kind of going for the Fortnite route, aren't they? Of each season is themed on something, which is probably quite a smart model to follow, seeing as they make billions of dollars.
Yeah, I had no idea that was the way they were going to take it. Like, it just didn't occur to me at all. So when they started showing, I was like, this is a really cool idea. I want to play it so much.
And it's quite a clever way of, well, as well, of like that one new, they showed two new rounds, it looked like. The one where you have to like move blocks to get out to the top of a race looked really cool. The second one kind of looked like the Hoopsadaisy game where you have to get through hoops, but I think reskinning it with the medieval stuff and adding a new element is a clever way of not having to come up with brand new games every single time, just kind of tweaking original ones. So
exactly. Just move. Well, they've talked before to us about wanting to change games so that you can't get perfectly good at them. So I love the idea that we'll see, you know, medieval slime climb versus candy slime climb or whatever. Like, I think there's something to that idea of you're not just reskinning, but you're retweaking so that people can't become genius level Fall Guys players without real effort. And I think that's a very smart idea. Mm-hmm. That game is just good as fuck.
It's very fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think season two is... I think there's still like 40 odd days left on this battle pass, so it's a little while away, but not ages. So that looks fun. Medal of Honor Above and Beyond is a fully VR Medal of Honor game, which looks on paper interesting. I'm not sure if it's, again, it's going to be the situation because it's fully VR. Will I ever actually play it?
I loved that they started off being like, this is more than just a fun action game. We've talked to veterans and stuff, and it's just a fucking Tarantino film for the rest of that trailer.
And just the all the things they were talking about, it's like in VR you can actually look around the corner and see enemies. Like, this is the same thing people have been saying about VR for like 5 years now. We understand that you can look around a corner at an enemy in VR.
It is done by Respawn though, so
yeah I trust they will be good. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think it's going to be the problem people have for a little while after Half-Life Alyx, as by all accounts, I haven't played it, pretty much nailed the first person shooter in VR. How are people going to follow that up?
Yeah, I mean, I say it respawns the people I trust to do it, and like, I think it makes sense to rebirth Medal of Honor as something that's not just Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. I like that it's leaning back on, it's an OSS game. It's about like a single person like having a Spielbergian adventure in World War II, which is what those original ones were. I kind of like that it's a bit of a throwback in that, and it'll give me an M1 Garand that I can fire without ever having to kill real people. So
the thought of doing D-Day in VR does terrify me.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it'll be nice. And hiding from the Gestapo. The idea of having to be the characters from the start of Inglourious Basterds makes me quite upset.
It's weird that we choose to relive the horrors of people of 7 years ago.
But like, then, out of choice. A lot of that trailer is very clearly just like, fuck up the Nazis. The bit where he puts a grenade up a mail tube, I was like, yes, please, this is the game I want. Because when they were doing like, it's going to be, when they were teasing it, it's like, this is a sad reflection on the horrors of the war. I was like, I don't need that in VR. But when I saw grenade up a tube, 100% in. That's me done.
As far as I'm aware, you can also beat someone up with a frying pan, which sounds great.
Perfect. I'm in.
Yep.
Well done, Respawn. Yep.
I'll give it a go.
Another win for Big Vince.
When can we expect that one?
Let's have a look.
Holiday 2020, I believe.
He's done it.
That soon. Mm-hmm. I did not know. There you go. Ratchet and Clank are back and looking as sparkly as ever.
Mm.
I think it's hard. I know what they're doing. It's hard to convey how powerful a PS5 is until you actually are going to be able to play it, I think, and realise that there is no loading screen, no stutter on that. Because like, all clips we see of games don't have that anyway, because they're pre-recorded. But it did look very impressive.
I love that.
They're beautiful.
I love that their approach to it was essentially just, what the PS5 can do is make things really busy. It's just so busy. There's so many elements to look at, and I thought that's a smart way to like get something across of what you'll be doing. Like, I still don't think, I'm still fully of the opinion, and I agree with Tom Marks on this, that like, the visual upgrade is not that impressive. It's what you do around the visuals now. It's just creating unprecedented amounts of stuff at high speed that's going to be what defines this generation, at least for a while.
Especially as I think Ratchet & Clank on PS4 was pretty much as good as you can, like, that was almost Pixar-like quality.
It was
like,
beautiful.
It's hard to make that look
watching this
any better,
Ratchet
and
Clank
style.
I think it probably indicates how well they did on the 2016 one, because it doesn't look that different. No. Like, it's very, very similar.
I'm very glad they appear to be leaning heavily into, and I know they've always done this to a certain extent, but the weapon stuff. That's always been the Ratchet and Clank like element that I enjoy. I don't really give a shit about those characters or that world, but the idea of just having mad bullshit constantly thrown at me is very cool. They made a big show of how much there's in there, so that's cool.
It's really fun, and I like the idea they went into a bit more detail on those haptic triggers, or the haptic feedback and the triggers on the DualSense. That I do like that idea. If you have a weapon that you like half press the trigger, it does one projectile, but if you fully press it in, it does both barrels. That I don't know how, I haven't touched a DualSense, so I don't know how, are you going to be accidentally firing two triggers all the time? Is that going to take getting used to?
It's good to see people finally making good on the promise of the GameCube in 2020, but you know, I think the interesting thing with DualSense, I think you're right, I think there's going to be a learning curve to using that thing if people are properly going into it. I don't think we've talked about on the podcast yet, the thing they released where they had loads of developers talking through what they're going to do mm-hmm. with it. One of those being Deathloop saying your guns can jam and your triggers will physically jam, which sounds mental. I got an amazing response to my tweet about that. I can't remember who it was, and I'm very sorry, but someone who said, like, I'm really worried that I'm just going to slam... I think he said, I'm going to break my triggers if I put some beans into it. Which I thought was very funny.
It's going to be hard to know if your controller's broken anymore.
That's it.
My gun's jammed all the time.
It's kind of odd. But I think Ratchet & Clank looks good. Mm. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to play it. And they said launch window as well, so that and Spider-Man around launch time. Insomniac are having a good time there. One more we're going to talk about, because we're not going to talk about everything, because there was tons. It's something that wasn't actually at opening night live, but an IGN exclusive. Mm. Joe, tell us about Sendress.
Sendress is this... So we, to point it out, we're so IGN is covering the rest of Gamescom post opening night live. So there was a live show afterwards, and there's live shows every day until Sunday. Watch it, even though it's late for the UK, but you know, if you're just in bed or whatever. But we announced a few things yesterday. We showed off more of Observer. We had Blood Bowl 3, which I'm kind of interested in. I like the look of... Well, there's Aragami 2, which is cool. That Tenchu game where they... Now it's like a three-player co-op thing, which is kind of cool. But the one that really caught my eye was this game Sendress, which is by a new studio called Nameless 13, which is co-founded by one of the guys that started Dontnod, who did Life is Strange and Vampire and Remember Me. If you remember that. and now his new game, Sendress, is this like horrifically bleak looking narrative survival game, which is not the most exciting way to shout it out. But if you watch the trailer, I think you get a good sense of it. You've got this party of four characters trying to get to a safe haven in essentially a black and white apocalyptic world who have to make decisions on the way. But it sounds like there's a lot to it. So there's survival aspects of like scavenging and food, but it sounds more like management than boring walking around chopping down trees and that kind of survival side of stuff. But it's also got like morally grey decision making along the way. Your party members can die depending on your decisions, which will change what your party can do, which all leads to, like, I think they said it's 16 different endings. And I don't know how long it's going to be, but there's a lot about it that I think looks really interesting. It's got a very cool, like, austere look to it as well.
I really like the trailer. The music sounds really good as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm properly into that.
But it's one of those...
Any idea when we'll be playing it?
I think it's 2021. Let me have a look. Sendress, IGN. I wrote the fucking news story, I should remember.
Yeah.
2021, Steam.
Good. We are bringing this big energy, and that's all I wanted for everyone. Do you know who else was bringing big energy? DC last weekend. They've nailed the online live stream.
Yeah.
I know everyone said it, but it was very impressive.
That showcase, my favourite thing about it is that it was basically by accident, because do you remember what that show was originally meant to be? It was 24 hours of clashing panels across five different virtual stages. That you may have even had to have like walked around or navigated around in real time. So at the time, we, in terms of covering it, we were freaking out. And when the fans were like, why are you doing this? Make it so I can watch things in order. When they changed it, it suddenly became the best curated show of the year. Like, no offense to IGN running Gamescom right now, but we've got 4 days to do stuff. They had 8 hours, and I thought that showcase was absolutely fantastic.
Amazing. Let's talk about some of our favourite things. The Batman, the film, the Matt Reeves movie with Robert Pattinson as the Bat, Paul Dano as the Riddler, Colin Farrell as Richard Kind, a.k.a. the Penguin. It looks brilliant to me. That is what I want from a Batman film. I'm fully in on Pattinson. Like, Paul Dano is one of my favourite actors.
Yes.
And the Riddler is always been my favourite Batman villain. So I'm very excited for this.
Sorry, someone's cutting something down outside my house. I'm going to close the window.
Is it the Riddler?
It might be the Riddler. He's carving a big question mark into a tree. I am amazed by the number of ways that Batman can be repurposed for film. I love that they've done, like, goth, camp, gritty urban movie, and now it's just emo.
Like, now it's
David Fincher.
Basically reminded
film
me of Seven. Yeah. Yeah, it was very Seven, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which and, I'm into.
I mean, get Nirvana on it, why not? And
yeah.
Oh no, not Nirvana.
Yeah, it was.
Was it? Yeah. My brain's gone wrong. I really like the look of it. I'm concerned that it might in full be a bit much, but I'm not sure yet. I can't tell. I love the look of it. I love his mad hot rod car, because that feels like there's a tiny bit of Tim Burton to that. Like, it feels like they're leaning slightly into slight madness, which I think is good fun.
And the car mostly reminds me of the 66 car.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just that with a massive fucking engine on the back.
Yeah.
I like that a lot of the outfits are kind of just like pretty homemade as well. Like, if that is, we're presuming that's the Riddler doing like the sellotaping up.
Presuming,
no, we're not. Yeah, Penguin just look like a middle-aged man. Catwoman. I've completely gone blank. What's it?
Zoe
Kravitz.
Yeah.
That looks like a very just homemade Catwoman outfit as well. So I'm into that kind of just very grounded. Like, Batman to me is always his best when it's grounded.
Mm.
I'm not, same with the graphic novels as well. I always like the more just down-to-earth detective stories, so I'm hoping there's gonna be a lot of detective. Basically, I want it to be Seven, but instead of Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, you've got Jeffrey Wright and Robert Pattinson as Batman and Gordon.
Can we talk about how Jeffrey Wright somehow has gone under the radar as the most perfect looking Commissioner Gordon of all time?
Yeah,
like, as soon as he appeared, I was like, that's just comic book Gordon. Like, how does he look so perfect?
It's amazing.
It's so good.
Tash and glasses.
There's also,
and it's a job done.
I can't remember his name. I saw someone, I think it was EastEnders. There's an EastEnders man in it.
Yeah, Trevor from EastEnders.
That's it, Trevor from EastEnders is in it.
The one who's in Chernobyl as well.
Yeah, I saw The Independent,
he's having a great
like,
time.
Literally run a whole story about how Trevor from EastEnders is in Batman. It's really good.
It's a very prominent shot in that trailer.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Funny.
But yeah. That's only from, I think they said 25% of the film has been shot, so...
Yeah. In Liverpool, of all... Like, I had no idea they were using
Liverpool
as a... Liverpool,
yeah.
As a proxy for Gotham.
And they're shooting more in London soon, so maybe... Keep your eye out. You may see a Batman. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Perfect.
another film, Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
That... I still can't... Like, I'm worried about this film, because... Although I love Guardians of the Galaxy, this seems one step too far for James Gunn to me. This seems like his ultimate fan fiction film from the way he speaks about it. And that trailer is just like non-stop cast announcements. Just like, there's 20-odd people in this. About 75%, I think, never ever heard of.
But they're all just like... The point is, they're just going to die. Like, they're just gone.
Well, yeah. I suppose so. The reason why death in the Marvel films is important is because you actually give a shit about those people. Like, no one gives a shit about any of these characters. There's not one person outside of Harley Quinn that anybody other than the deepest DC fan person will know.
I think you're talking shite, mate. Polka Dot Man, played by David Dasmalchian, is a wicked idea. I'm genuinely into it.
He's one of the creepiest actors to me.
I love him.
I think it's mainly because of Prisoners.
He's creepy. He's horrible in Prisoners. Well, he's not horrible, but...
And in Blade Runner. He's a bit
Coco creepy. In Blade Runner. I'm still mad there's a character called Coco in Blade Runner.
He's creepy. He's even creepy in the 5 minutes he's in The Dark Knight.
Yeah. I came out much more positively out of this than you. Like, I am into the idea of James Gunn being able to, if he is allowed... Which remains to be seen, but it sounds like they're going for it. If he's allowed to lean into his roots with Troma and just make a fucking gross, like, gore-filled
That's what we don't know. Do we know it's going to be R-rated yet? Do we know it?
I mean, they specifically called out exploding genitals, so I'm assuming it has to be. I think exploding genitals
more promising.
Is straight up R.
Get Willem Dafoe in there.
Willem Dafoe. He's the expert.
What was I going to say? That's what I was going to say about... Yeah, they... James Gunn said he's talked to his special effects guy in the film, who's also the guy he worked with on a lot of the Marvel films as well. And he said that the Suicide Squad has more explosions than every Marvel film combined. And he didn't say that with like his tongue in his cheek or anything. I don't understand how that's possible.
I mean, I guess maybe practical explosions would be the way you get around it.
I think there's been 22
Marvel films, hasn't there? 23 now.
Yeah, but I bet most of those explosions weren't real. You see? Yeah. That's how they get you.
I want it to be good. I'm still confused by this whole concept of, is this a reboot? Is this a sequel? Because some of the members of the last film are still there, of course. Like, what is the whole plan of this?
Well, they've got a multiverse now, so it doesn't matter.
Are they pretending it never happened, which is probably the best thing to do for everyone involved?
Yeah, I think it's all right. But then, aren't you cutting out... How did Birds of Prey work? Like, that was definitively set afterwards, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I mean, not that Jared Leto was in it, but it was... She had broken up with him.
Yeah.
That was moving on. I don't know whether actually the answers you'll need will be in The Flash, because The Flash is going to be the film that actually on screen...
I don't want to watch The Flash though, Matthew.
I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Ezra, but I like Muschietti. Like, he's a good director. Yeah.
I suppose they have said Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton has designed the Flash suit. Like, not Michael Keaton, but Michael Keaton's Batman has designed
I thought you'd say actual Michael Keaton was doing costume design.
There is a certain nerdy pleasure, I think, in the idea of seeing Keaton and Batfleck in one place and, like, what else that could mean. There's going to be a bunch of weird references to stuff in there that beyond those two casting choices. I like that they're indulging the DC... TV stuff. Not that I ever got super into it. I quite liked the Flash TV series for a couple of seasons. And I love that they have actually built in that idea that, like, Grant Gustin's Flash accidentally gave the superhero name to Ezra Miller, his character, likes it. So there's this, like, weird little extra kind of Easter egg that you don't need to have, but it's a fun thing. Like, there's stuff to it that I think is genuinely quite fun. It also apparently opens the idea that, like, Gotham Knights could have those characters appear and stuff, because, not that it will necessarily, but, like, the multiverse extends across everything now, which means these crossovers are allowed, which I think, there's a lot more to be interested in DC now than there was maybe a year or two ago, and I'm into it.
I'm more interested after this weekend of stuff, because not only have we got a Suicide Squad film, we've got a Suicide Squad game.
Sunset Overdrive 2.
Wow, that is what it looks like, Joe. So you've got the four they've announced so far: Harley Quinn, Captain Boomerang. Oh, I always just call Mr. Boomerang because I think it's funnier. Mm-hmm. Deadshot, King Shark. Those are the four. I don't know if it's going to be limited to four. They'll probably have extras come in at some point.
You think so? I think the implication to me is that it's a four-player game. That's what I got out of it. But
who are you fancying, though?
Well, I like that that trailer, Mr. Boomerang, became instantly more enjoyable than Jai Courtney's entire performance as that character, which was interesting.
He's the one that caught my eye to play as. He looked like it'd be fun.
And I like the idea of Rocksteady being maybe a little bit crueler in this. Like, it looks like there's going to be a certain amount of sort of grossness, which you'd hope from Suicide Squad. I'm not convinced by whatever those fucking enemies are.
Have to have some sort of grunt, don't you?
Well, that's it. Just like little purple skeleton boys. I don't know. It didn't look great.
As long as if they explode into like purple goo, I'm kind of into it.
But that's the thing. Everything you're saying is what Sunset Overdrive did. Yeah. And like, that would be fine. But, you know, at what point are we getting into a situation?
I trust Rocksteady to make that feel good. Combat-wise, anyway. The whole idea of the game, of course, is to kill the Justice League. We saw evil Superman doing some nasty laser business. I think they confirmed there's seven members of the Justice League you have to capture or kill. Mm. I think they said that, I can't remember which three it is now, can only be captured, they can't be killed. I think it was Superman, Wonder Woman, and one other that I've forgotten.
Green Lantern, maybe? Like, that would be people that are... too powerful for you to
noticeably
reasonably kill.
They said this one is in the Arkham universe. Mm. So, and Batman wasn't on that list, so Batman can be killed.
Well, but also Batman is canonically faking his death in the Arkhamverse at the moment. So
I suppose we don't know how when this is set, do we? Because there was no hint. Were there? I'm trying to think now in the Arkham games. Did they ever mention the Justice League? Or
isn't there a Fortress of Solitude reference or something somewhere? I'm sure there's Easter eggy stuff, but I don't think they ever bring them in as like, you know, a going concern in that way.
Yeah. But it looks like a bright world as well. Be nice to go to Metropolis, because we'll talk about Gotham Knights in a bit. I do love Batman and I love Gotham, but there's only so many times I can play in Gotham at night and it feel different, I think. Whereas a nice bright Metropolis sounds a nice place to play to me. Still a couple of years away, but I'm up
very
for it as
different
well.
Architecture as well. Metropolis, like, it is a very different city. It's obviously, it's not gothic, it's much more kind of art deco-y and stuff like that, so I think it will feel distinctly different alongside the fact that we're playing just horrible characters.
We don't know as much as we do when you compare it to Gotham Knights. We don't know.
Well, it's not out until 2022, is it?
Exactly. Like, we don't. I'm still not sure what the online elements are. I assume the campaign will be 4-player co-op, but then is there multiplayer? Like, do we know if that one is at all games of service?
Well,
have they gone into that?
There was a rumor a while back where people thought Rocksteady were making a Justice League game in the vein of Destiny, and obviously that has not come to fruition. If indeed that's what they were doing at some point. But whether that means that this is actually, possibly a first-person game, which would make sense with the ranged weaponry that we're looking at for most of those characters, whether that means game as service, whether that means other characters, like, it kind of feeds into the idea quite well. Again, like, it's a massive rumour. Who actually knows what that thing is, aside from Rocksteady and WB? But it wouldn't surprise me to see that as a game of service in a big shared world of some kind.
Do you think first? I don't think it'll be first person.
I don't, because of the amount of flying that was suggested in it, I'd imagine it'd be third. It's easier to fly in third, and it's easier to do the first person, the melee stuff. Mm-hmm. But also, like Joe says, quite a lot of those characters, like Harley aside, like Deadshot is almost entirely kind of ranged. King Shark isn't, maybe.
Well, he's got a minigun in that trailer, though.
Well, yeah. But King Shark, I guess, is typically known for eating stuff more than he is kind of like shooting stuff with minigun. I genuinely don't know. Like, there's so little to pull from that trailer.
It would be odd if you played a Deadshot and you couldn't even look down sight, like aim down sights on a gun. That would feel a bit odd.
I guess it would, like, is it Ghost Recon? It's a third-person game, but when you look down sights, you get a first-person view. Like, there's plenty of ways to do it. Yep. I'm surprised that Deathstroke isn't in it, which was my main sort of disappointment from it.
I do wonder whether that's, you know, they could just have 15 characters or something in the end version. Like, we might just have seen this like taste of a party or something. And I would be a lot more interested, I think, if there were like a bunch of people to play as. I think that could be really cool. But yeah, God knows what that game is, so who cares?
But that one looks very fun. So does Gotham Knights, which is 1 or 2 player co-op, not 4-player, which I initially thought, seeing as they showed 4 characters in the trailer. But I'm well up for this one as well. This one is much more like an Arkham game, despite not being in the Arkham universe. You've got your Gotham Knights, you've got your Batgirl, your Robin, your Nightwing, and your Red Hood. I'm a Red Hood person. Personally, I want to use the guns. Don't know if I'll actually be able to kill. Probably rubber bullets.
So I think I did a big interview with the producer and creative director the other day, and they made specific reference to gear in that game covering melee weapon, ranged weapon, suit. So I believe everyone has ranged weapons of some kind. So I think it's going to be as. Obviously, Red Hood's guns make the most sense, and they'll probably be his primary thing that you would use. But it does sound like Batgirl will have something, Robin will have something.
Like Batarangs.
Exactly. Or, like, I think we'll see more on how that works down the line, but it does sound like that, at least, is a standardised element.
I just want to be Red Hood because I'm edgy, and I'm just an edgy person.
Yeah.
But no, the sound of this game is what I want. There's it's not a games of service, which is crucial. It's a two-player co-op or single-player if you want to play it all by yourself. Story game in an open world Gotham that, I don't know, I just want it.
Yeah.
There's not a lot more to say than it ticks all the boxes.
I think a lot of people were worried that it was taking an Assassin's Creed Odyssey-type approach with the leveling. When they talked to us, they clarified more that the entire world is open from the beginning, mm-hmm. and that levels scale with you, and that there will be areas where there are like lower people who scale to a lower level than you, and areas where people scale to a higher level than you, but that nothing will be blocked because of level mm-hmm. gating, which I liked. What I also liked is that they said, depending on your levels, the types of enemies in those areas will change, and it might even come down to the story beats you've already hit. So like the factions you'll find in certain areas will change depending on which villains you've taken down, because you can go on simultaneous like villain hunts, which yeah. was a point Matt asked me to ask them and was very astute. But I like, yeah, the more I've seen, I had basically, when I first saw it, I was like, yes, this is absolutely for me. The more I thought about it, the more I was like, is it gonna do what I kind of want out of one of these, out of a Batman universe game after all this time? And then when I had that chat with them, and you can read a very long article of all the answers they gave us, answering a lot of big questions on IGN.
It's very informative.
There was so much stuff they said that was just like the perfect answer to me. Especially what I liked, after being so vociferously against the idea of the Avengers not letting you create your own costumes, they've said like, you get skin suits, but then you can adjust accessories on them and make them your own, which I think is a very good call. So yeah, I'm
and it's
excited.
Got the Court of Owls in, although they have confirmed the Court of Owls is not necessarily the main mystery of...
Well, the one thing that I really like that Joe got out of them, which was what I'd sort of thought might be the case, is it sounds like there are multiple storylines going on at any one time, and you can jump between them. It's kind yeah. of like, it is open world Gotham. There are, let's say, 10 threats in Gotham, and how you deal with that. Yeah. The one thing that I find really interesting about that idea of enemies changing with you as you level up and change and stuff like that is, I hope there's a systemic layer to that, because I've been waiting for WB Games to do something again with Nemesis, and not that it would be Nemesis system just in Gotham, which I do think would work anyway, yeah. but the idea of there being a systemic layer to what you're doing in Gotham changes yeah. the way that the enemies
That'd
approach
be cool.
you.
Like, if there was like a semi-boss sort of thug who was like part of Penguin's gang, and you defeated Penguin, and then like he's like, I've gone off to join Riddler, I'm mm-hmm. now his boss, like, and he remembers you or something, that would be cool. I don't
sort
know how
like,
complicated
it sounds
that is
to me. Like that Mr. Freeze battle, I get the impression is, like they said, it's halfway through Mr. Freeze, so you're obviously going to fight him multiple times. I like the idea that, you know how the Mr. Freeze fight in Arkham City, he can remember what you've done to him, so you can't do the idea that like he learns how what your playstyle is from battle to battle. Like if they could do something like that, I'd be really into that.
Well, and I like the idea of that being as well, like if there is 10 separate villain storylines or whatever, like that lends itself to co-op in a really nice way. It's like, I don't feel when I have to play it all with one person. Like, I could do the Mr. Freeze storyline with you and then go, oh, Joe, do you want to do Riddler together?
So they have clarified that is a host-guest situation. So you're not... I don't know if the guest is making progress in the same way. Like, they probably earned loot and stuff for their character, but I don't think it... they didn't say this outwardly, but my guess is it does not complete that mission for you in your world by doing it. I think you might just earn the stuff for it. One thing on the sort of systemic changing stuff that I really liked, and I have no idea how deep this will go, but they said, like, they want you to approach those situations dependent on level, dependent on enemy type, thinking not just about how to fight, but what gear you might take in to fight, because they made a point of there being, like, status effects and stuff like that, you know, more sort of on the Destiny level.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's quite cool. It kind of reminds me of the comic booky idea of, like, Batman has a suit for every situation, you know, like he can dress up differently to take on different threats. And they didn't specifically say that was like the idea, but they definitely acknowledged that that was part of that feeling. And I do like the idea that maybe, you know, the Freeze gang versus the Penguin gang are going to have different weaknesses, but maybe I have to go to one to get the kind of thing that will weaken the other one and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like if they build in that real like RPG level systems thinking, as Matt says, that could be really, really interesting.
I'm very into it. And the way you can just build out the characters as well, because they actually confirmed, like, you can have two Batgirls playing together. If you want to play as a Batgirl, I can also play a Batgirl, which I like. They're not worried about, oh, it doesn't make sense. Like,
and we've already seen the two Batgirl costumes there, of which one is Batgirl of Burnside with the yellow docks, which is quite clearly what I'm going to wear for the entire game. But the fact that there are then, like, you can have her with the cowl on with the white lenses and stuff like that. Like, yeah. I think the visual design of this is very much what I
and
like.
From what they say as well, just on a gameplay level as well, you can have two very different Batgirls or two very different Robins. Yeah. I'm just very... They're doing basically everything that I wanted Avengers to do. So, kind of, last Saturday, I think if I was Avengers... They're going to... That game is out next week, by the way, the Avengers game, which... I imagine they'll make a lot of money, but they must be thinking, like, DC to me there, of those two games, even Suicide Squad, bet from one trailer, have got me more excited than I am for Avengers.
And they obviously won't say it, and my guess is probably not, but I imagine if Gotham Knights was able to drop in other characters as DLC that you could then take around the full world and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm questioning whether that's even possible with the kind of game they're making, but... Even if it just meant a sequel where we get more of that kind of approach to it or something, there's a lot there that I think is very promising.
And at what point does Batman come back in that game as well? Do you think he'll be playable, or do you think he'll just come back in a story sense? There's no way he's dead.
I think if he's playable, to me, that strikes me more as like post-game, where maybe you get him back at the end, Court of Owls Resurrection or whatever the hell they're going to go with. But he just can't be dead. It would just be... It seems ludicrous. But it also makes me sound like, he just can't be dead. Which I don't think. I just don't believe it.
And can I play as Alfred?
I want to be an Alfred main so bad. One cool little detail that I really liked, and I know this goes against the thing you were saying earlier about always playing Gotham at nighttime, but I do really like this idea. We asked them if there was a day-night cycle. And the idea is, there is day and night. You only ever go out into Gotham at night, but your daytime sections are your prep between missions. So you go back to the Belfry, everyone takes their outfits off, so they're all just normal people having chats and stuff. That's where you talk to Alfred, that's where you spec up, and that's where a lot of the narrative beats happen. But that's all the daytime sections, and I really like this. There's something quite detective-y, something kind of comic book-y about this idea that, like, that's when they live their real existence, and then their secret identities come out at night. And I think that's properly cool.
It fulfills the fantasy, right?
Exactly.
Like that's what Batman's about.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. So Gotham Knights is out next year. Mm-hmm. Suicide Squad 2022 at the moment. We'll see where both of those will... I mean, Gotham Knights looked, from what we saw, looks like it's fairly far on. Mm. I wouldn't, you know... I don't know when it's coming out. I'd guess... Next summer, maybe? I don't know.
It seems that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Drop and it in the August slot, I'll be very happy.
Suicide Squad definitely is. Is Gotham Knights next gen only as well? I think it is, isn't it? I think they're both next gen only.
Did they confirm
for Gotham Knights?
I think they did. I don't know, mate.
Oh, no.
It's everything,
maybe it is
right?
PS4. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think it might be everything.
Yeah, it's on everything. I think Suicide Squad is next gen only. There we go. But those are games you'll be able to play in the future. There's some things you can play as of now.
What?
If you're a fan of Control, the AWE expansion dropped yesterday. The Altered World Events expansion, or the Alan Wake expansion, or the Alan Wake experience, whatever you want to call it, dropped yesterday. I reviewed it. I gave it an 8 because it is great. You've got about 3 to 4 hours of content in there.
That's slightly shorter than I was expected. Is it packed though? Is it a packed 3 to 4 hours?
It's the same sort of cadence as Control did. It's very much more Control, which I love Control, so that is never a bad thing to me that I'm getting more Control. It's maybe not as Alan Wake heavy as people there's definitely stuff.
Is it a spoiler to say if he's in it or not? I'm not gonna spoil that
for people.
Okay.
But I will say there's definitely lots of elements like this. The main antagonist is a character from Alan Wake.
Cool.
And he does speak to you. There's the main stuff you're gonna get is there's a lot of So you know how Control and indeed Alan Wake, there's a lot of extra reading to be done of things you pick up. That's the main thing you're going to get in all the correspondence and like letters you'll pick up. There's a lot about the Bright Falls case, and so you'll learn a lot more about that and the people of that town.
Is it almost like learning about the story of Alan Wake from the perspective of the house?
Yeah, exactly. It's more from an investigative point, even. And yeah, it's fun. It's more Control. The new, new service weapon type you get, Surge, is quite fun. It's like a sticky grenade launcher that you fire at people, then press the trigger again to set it off. It's quite cool. And it's quite useful as well, because there's new enemy types that, what are they called? I've forgotten. I wrote this yesterday and I've forgotten it all already. The Airborne Ranger, that's it. They're jetpack users who fire grenades.
I was never very good at the enemies that can fly in Control.
So yeah, it tests your shooting ability quite a lot, because launch is pretty much ineffective against them. So you want to be using Pierce. That's my tip for you. But I was always a Pierce main anyway.
Yeah, Pierce is the best.
And the final battle, I'm not going to say what it is or what it entails, is very good. It actually uses the light and the dark in interesting ways. So in this DLC, the darkness kind of has invaded the house a little bit along with the villain, and you use lamps as you would in Alan Wake to clear the path. You don't really use them in combat, but you kind of half do in the final battle, which is a cool thing.
Nice.
So there's dark. There is darkness in the house, and when you're in the darkness, it drains your energy meter. So you can't, you have to get into the light to restore your energy, so you can't like dash or use your shield or anything. So that's quite a cool extra mechanic. And crucially, the most fun part, because we all know launch is the best thing about Control. That ability, it's launch, mate. Because I powered up launch to max as well, so it just basically one shot everyone. I use it more than the gun. You can now multi-launch, so if you hold in R1 then press L1 two times, you can hold three things at once and target multiple enemies with launch.
Yep.
So that feels extra good. So yeah, it's good. It's short but sweet, I'd say, and it has a very good end little tease, which I won't spoil for everyone. So it looks like Remedy are doing the right thing when they're building out this connected universe of their games. They're not just slapping things on, they're actually kind of intertwining them quite well. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where they go next. I don't want to say where I think that will be yet, because that will spoil it.
I am very excited to play it this weekend. It does make me extremely sad to think that this might be the last bit of Control ever, because of how much I loved that game. But
I would be surprised. This isn't me spoiling emphasis. I'd be surprised if we don't get
more DLC.
Control. No, more Control or Control 2.
Oh, like, I think that's absolutely the case. I just mean this game.
Oh, of this game. Yeah, I think this is the end of this game, if I'm honest.
I almost don't want them to do another Control. The thing I like about Remedy is that they do bounce from idea to idea, and I like the idea that there's now cohesion between them, but I'd love to see another idea from their wacko brains.
Yeah. Can I imagine in 6 years if we get like the Gotham Knights equivalent, where it's Jesse Fade and Alan Wake, Max Payne, and what's the lad from Quantum Break?
Jack Joyce.
Yeah, get four of them in an open world.
I only ever remember Jack Joyce's name because of how beautiful it sounds in Sam Lake's accent. Jack Joyce! It's amazing. Can I give you my pitch for my fantasy Control game?
Do it.
I want a Control game where the Bureau is actually working properly, and the core is a management game in which you have to assign resources to all the different departments. But then when there are incursions or things you have to go to, you play the actual agents going out.
It's kind of like XCOM.
Yeah, I'm thinking XCOM Bureau type vibe, but obviously a lot better. Maybe a bit of like Fallout Shelter stuff, look in there. Because obviously everything lends itself to this, right? You have to clear out areas of the Hiss or whatever the oldest house is holding to build new rooms. And then the building itself can shift, so it's suddenly like, oh no, my research department's fallen into the abyss. I just think it'd be amazing. And if anyone at Remedy does want to get in touch with me, my mobile number.
We are willing to write your XCOM game.
Yeah.
I've thrown myself into that as well. Note the use of we. Another game that's out today if you're into mad football games, have I got one for you? Because me and Joe have been playing a bit of Captain Tsubasa.
Rise of the New Champion.
Rise of New Champions, whatever it's called. Up until a few days ago, I knew nothing of Captain Tsubasa. And
now you've watched the entire anime?
I have not watched the entire anime because I don't have the time, and I didn't realise it started as a manga in 1981, so I did not know it had been going on this long.
Apparently inspired Zinedine Zidane to become a footballer.
Yeah. If you want more Captain Tsubasa facts, check out me and Joe have done a Let's Play on IGN. I'm sure one of us will tweet it out when it's live later on Friday, if not Saturday. Give that a watch. Play a full match against each other. It's an odd game because I can't tell if it's terrible, but we did have a lot of fun playing it together.
It was.
So I don't know what to...
Well, I think...
It's a weird one.
I think the thing to remember is, like, it is presented as a football game, you interact with it like a football game, but it is not a football game. Like, it is
it's a fighting game, really.
It's a fighting game with 11 characters on each side, which makes it sound more complicated than it is. It's pretty basic. The stuff I'm interested in is... how deep it actually goes. So I played about an hour of the story mode after we finished, and like, there's a lot of fucking chatting away anime
waffle
style. I'm interested in whether there is a team building idea, because there are like combos and stuff you can do, and certain players near each other will activate different effects. So like, that starts to delve into like a live action tactics game in some respects, and like, real time tactics game. I don't know if that's ever actually a choice you get to make, but I kind of like the idea of almost treating it like deck building, where you get millions of party members and get to build a team that works in certain ways and has certain effects and combos built in.
That would be cool. I think that sounds fun, because the problem was, I think I was trying to play it like a football game, and you can't do that because the passing's just not very good, and you can't really shoot properly, because you have to fill up your spirit gauge.
You do.
By doing special dribble moves past opponents and getting in the zone, and then holding in the shoot button for as long as possible, which goes against every instinct I have from playing a football game, and then unleashing. In my case, I was Toho Academy. I had Hyuga, who has a tiger shot, which the goalkeeper could not handle.
No, it was fucking annoying.
Just ripped right through his hands. I will say all the shot animations and the goalkeeper animations that they cut to are really
cool.
They are
very
proper,
amazing.
Well-animated anime clips.
Yeah.
It's not normally my sort of thing, but I could play a little bit more of it.
It feels like, it feels very much, in look at least, it feels like it's on the Dragon Ball FighterZ level of really effectively communicating the look of an anime in an interactive video game, and I think that's always worth praising, because that's very hard to do.
Yeah. Like, I've never met a Tsubasa, Captain Tsubasa fan, but I would be intrigued to know what they think of this game. Is this like, for I know, if you're a fan of that anime or that manga series, this could be a dream game, and they've absolutely nailed it. So I'd be intrigued to know, if you are a Captain Tsubasa fan, please email us at IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com, because I want to know from people that actually know about Captain Tsubasa. Please be someone out there. Speaking of feedback, like we said, there's no quiz this week. Should we get onto some feedback?
Let's do it.
Yeah, I think it's you first, Joe.
Oh, okay, hello. Excuse me. This is from Rory Pallister. All right, lads. Big fan of the pod and everything you guys do. Following watching a few shows that were a tad of a heavy watch during lockdown, Devs, yes, The Expanse, yes, The Americans, yes, I decided to watch a few shows with lower stakes, including The Trip, The Detectorists, and Mortimer and White House Gone Fishing. And I've been really enjoying watching shows where the worst case scenario is not the end of the world. That's really good. I was wondering if there are any low stakes shows you like to go back to that you find an easy watch. Be safe, and for Christ's sake, respect the sea, Rory.
Wise words, always.
Always wise
sea.
Words. For Christ's
sake. I always go back to comedies for stuff like that. Like, I'm most of the way through my annual Peep Show rewatch at the moment.
Oh, we did that earlier this year.
I do that with The Office and with Partridge and everything, but I also do like high stakes stuff as well, so I normally have one going at all times. I'm on my first watch through of Lost at the moment, 17 episodes into season one, so I'm getting on with it.
I mean, that's a bit heavier than Peep Show.
That's my highest stake stuff.
On an island.
I'm also watching Avatar through for the first time as well, and that's kind of, although it's not, you know, it's in the middle, it's medium stake stuff. It's a kid's cartoon, really, isn't it? So it's nice to have one in the background.
I will say Mortimer and... Why can't I fucking say Mortimer and White House Gone Fishing is an incredibly good shout for this. That show is just gorgeous. At the moment, I am watching for the first time Friday Night Dinner, which I did not expect to like and actually think is really
good. It's so much better than it has any right to be, considering its weird format, but I think it's incredibly well written.
What I'll say about it that I think is very nice and very applicable to this. So when I saw this email come in, I was like, this is perfect. What I think makes it so perfect for the low stakes thing is it's one of those sitcoms written where essentially the bones of every single episode in the entire show are exactly the same. So it gets to become like comfort food very quickly, where it's like they always turn up, they always start having dinner, they're always interrupted by the same neighbor, there's always a big problem, and then it ends on a big stupid joke that's never resolved again. And like every episode I watch, I'm just like, oh, this is very easy, very chill. And the dad character is just fucking hilarious. It's amazing. I love him.
So my recommendation for this would be a show called Joe Pera Talks With You.
Yes,
any of you guys have heard of this?
Oh my god, yes.
I have not.
So it's one of these where, I'll admit, lockdown is not an easy time for me, so I've been finding a few things that are a bit more kind of on the relaxing scale. And basically, Joe Pera Talks With You is, they're about 12 minutes each, they're really short, and Joe Pera is just, he's a comedian, and he is kind of, he's playing himself, but it's an exaggerated version of himself, and it's very difficult to know what that exaggeration is, because I've never seen what he really is like.
So I've listened to an interview with the real Joe Pera, and it is astonishing how close he seems to be to the character, because he's a man in his 30s who seems to be playing a character who is a man in his 60s, with a lot of the mannerisms of that. But
he's got
a
very awkwardness. Like holds his shoulders like very high. He walks very slowly. He's a music teacher at like a middle school. Mm-hmm. And he lives on his own with a dog. And like his biggest love in life really is his grandma. And one episode, which is my favorite one, is where he falls in love with The Who, but only Barbara O'Reilly.
Oh my god, it's so good. That honestly, if you watch one episode to see what it's like, it's all on All Four, I think. The Who episode is just like astonishingly good and lovely. It's an Adult Swim show, so you go in with an expectation that it's going to be in some way like
edgy comedy,
edgy
to a
or
degree.
Creepy, and especially because he's playing a 60-year-old teacher who's quite mild-mannered and odd, you kind of keep expecting it to go in like a horrible direction. But the entire point is the show is just really
lovely.
Nice, and he's just explaining his life to you very quietly. And like it started, the pilot was him reading you a bedtime story, and that's the entire point. Mm-hmm. Often it goes nowhere, but it's always got a good laugh. If you know Connor O'Malley from anything, he's also in it as an angry man, which is his greatest role. Connor O'Malley's one of the best people on the internet. And yeah, oh man, what a great pick. That is such a good shout, man.
It's interesting because I watched the original pilot they did, because that's also wonderful. And that is quite a different show, because I think it almost takes the piss out of him a little bit more. Whereas when they actually settled on what the show is, it's not it. Like, the show genuinely adores its main character, who, yes, is very naive. Like, all of his interests are... The arc of the second series is all basically about him growing beans. But it's kind of just beautiful. There's an episode which is just him going to the supermarket, and, like, he's just got these rules where he asks himself three questions and he'll buy it if he can afford it, if he needs it, and if he'll definitely eat it. But that low stakes, just feeling that he's just a nice guy with a few quirks, and watching those quirks, because those quirks do evolve over the two seasons. But yeah, it's just lovely. You don't ever have to worry. That's the thing. Once you've watched about three of them, and you realise nothing's going to go wrong, and you're in like a safe pair of hands, and it's gonna be fine. Ran out of them way too quickly, but they are very rewatchable.
That's so good.
Nice. Good wreck.
Right.
Got some feedback, Matt.
Yeah, I do. This one is from Ryan Skinner. He says, "Hey all, I've been enjoying the conversation you all have around console exclusives. I don't have a strong opinion about it, so hearing all the perspectives has been enlightening. However, I do have two questions on the topic. Number one, do you think we would be having this conversation if Microsoft had as many good exclusives as Sony? For example, if Xbox was getting Iron Man and Sony was getting Spider-Man, would we still be having as heated conversations around this topic? And two, why does Nintendo seem to be excluded from the pushback against console exclusion? Have they just removed themselves so far from the console war conversation that nobody really cares? Thanks for the awesome content, Ryan from Colorado."
Where we stand, boys. I think on the second one, on Nintendo, I think you've pretty much nailed it. I think they're so different that no one's ever asking for Zelda on PS4,
well,
are they?
They are, but the answer is so obvious that it's just like makes no difference. Yeah. You know, like, I think Nintendo have just established themselves as the second console people at this point, or like the non-console people. And
I think what they offer in their games is so different that it almost feels okay to have that in like its separate own little console ecosystem, whereas PlayStation and Microsoft I think are more different these days than they ever have been, but they still offer mature rated violent shooty stuff.
I think to your first point about Iron Man versus Spider-Man, I don't think we'd be having the conversation about console exclusives we are having. We'd be having a very different one, which is, what the fuck is going on? Why are you doing that? That's stupid. Which I know is partly the conversation now, but I think the Spider-Man thing, as it stands, is more rooted in business, and that would be more rooted in almost tokenism, like creating a difference between games rather than uniting them. I think the conversation right now is, which we've touched on before, is that we have reached a point at which the expectation is console exclusives outside of homemade, for want of a better term, first party made games. There shouldn't really be a difference between those games anymore. And we're getting to a point where people expect them to be cross play, cross progression, you know, like being able to play games across everything with anyone you want feels way more of an expectation than it did even a year ago. Like, I would be quite surprised now if a shooter came out and it was made hard for me to play with other people because Call of Duty's done it so well for the last couple of years, and, you know, that kind of thing has really come in. That would be what I'll say.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it, though. I've got a piece of feedback here from Elliot O'Neill. There's a very important question. Yep. Starts off with, huge fan, listen every week. I love you all equally. Absolutely no favouritism here. That's good. Although, keen to hear more about Matt's peach ring.
To which
I'd
say...
Any more updates on peach rings?
Elliot, go home and paint your blood angels.
Okay.
Me and Elliot both know each other through Warhammer to a degree, so...
There we go.
It'll be off painting blood angels.
I want to know about the peach ring. wonder if you could settle a debate I've been having regarding sweets. What is it called? A. Pick a mix. B. Pick un mix. Or C. Pick and mix. Cheers, lads. Elliot from Bath. I have an opinion
on
this.
So do I.
I would write pick un mix.
Yes, I would.
But I kind of say pick a mix.
Oh, really?
I kind of say it too quick that I kind of go pick
a
mix.
So I'd say formal, if you're at a dinner party, C. Pick and mix. But with your mates, big pick and mix. But I would always write pick and mix.
Yeah, I think I say pick a mix, but I say it so quickly, it kind of fades. You wouldn't
it's
know.
Certainly,
what I'm
I have
doing.
Never
kind of
seen it written as pick a mix, because it doesn't mean anything.
I do think it does mean something, because it's like you are picking a mix of sweets. But for me, it's, I guess, is option D kind of pick A-N mix, as in you're dropping
pick
the
and,
D.
Pick because, and mix.
Yeah, as in like you're dropping the D from the... Because you're contracting the words together, so it's pick and mix.
That's B, isn't it? Pick and mix.
But I think I put a little bit more emphasis
extra
on an A there.
A little bit more pick and...
Pick and mix.
Not pick and... Pick and...
Pick and mix!
It's a bit like, you know, no one writes Guns and Roses, do they? It's Guns and
Roses. Well,
it'd
be weird if they did, because that's literally not the name of the band.
Yeah. But, yeah, good insight. Let us know. Actually, don't let us know about that, because that's not a good thing to write feedback in on your answer to that.
I did. Sorry, I was trying to think of a version of the Guns N' Roses thing that works, and the one I can come up with is imagine if we called them Beat Them Up Games. I like Beat Them Up Games. That's my standing in the world. Anyway, carry on.
Do keep your Tenet feedback coming in, because we will, in the next week or two, do a little spoiler section on Tenet. Me, Joe, and Matt have all seen it at this point, and I assume by the time next week, more people will have. I'm sure we all have a variety of thoughts on it, but yeah, keep your feedback coming in on Tenet. IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
Spoiler for the spoiler cast. Disappointing! there we go.
I'm in the middle. I liked it, but not his best.
No.
Which I think tends to be the consensus opinion.
I mean, there's several five-star reviews out there, mate. You know, some people really rate it.
Some people gave it 2 stars, which I do think is, you know, it's not a 2-star film. But there we go. Thank you for listening. It's been a lovely time.
Big energy.
Thank you, Joe and Matt.
Big energy.
Oh, it was big energy. Massive energy. Yeah, I think that's the title of this podcast. Big Energy Friday. Big Energy Podcast.
Big Energy Roundup.
Big Defoe, Big Willem Defoe Energy.
That actually kind of works.
Yeah, we'll go
big
for that.
Big Willem Defoe Energy is perfect.
Lovely. And as promised, here is the end of Search Theme to play us out.
We're not doing a quiz. Goodbye. After it. It's just the end. All right?
Yeah, there is no quiz. Don't even wait. There's no quiz. Goodbye.
Bye. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.